All right, I did. I hit the old record button. You have a sound test. I can't see your levels.
I'm speaking. I'm talking.
That's good. Let me see. 1, 2, 3, and two, the foe. Dingity dong, your doorbell. JBC, is that your dough? Yeah, it's really bad. Go ahead.
Welcome, everybody. To Just Because It's, I'm giving up on that shit right now.
Good.
My name is not Christopher Walken. My name is Joe Neal. And with me, virtually, thousands of miles away, is Jason Mark. Say hello, Jason Mark.
Hizzle.
Jason is my brother from another mother with the same grandmother. And this is our podcast. It's called Just Be Cousins.
Nice. That was beautiful. You're beautiful. Life is beautiful. Everything in this world is beautiful.
Let's just bask in it for an hour.
Let's bask.
Just don't say anything.
No.
I just want to sit back.
Okay.
Isn't that great? Oof. All right, maybe it's not so great.
I'm still basking.
Okay.
Okay, now I'm Baskin Robbins. Now I'm the country known as the Basque region.
You ever seen that movie Baskin?
No. Is it about basilisks?
Actually, it's a foreign film. Maybe it's German or something. And that word means something in another language. if you type it in, it's a horror movie that I haven't seen yet.
Oh, okay.
Maybe for our next horror episode, we can both watch it, because apparently it's a rough ride.
Yeah.
I guess it's about a house. And some investigators go into this house, maybe to try and solve a murder. But what they end up in is a torture porn mess.
Okay.
I think maybe with demons and stuff too.
Yeah.
I got the impression that it's a lot like the terrible montages from Event Horizon. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like one person chews another person's arm off, and then another person puts that arm up the first person's butt, and then the second person screams and blood comes out of their face.
Yeah, it's in Wikipedia. It's saying exactly the same thing. It said Baskin is a 2015 Turkish surrealist horror film directed by somebody based on his 2013 short film by the same name. It centers around five police officers who have inadvertently wandered into hell.
There you go.
Yeah.
When I think of hell, I think of Event Horizon.
Yeah, no, that little clip there is just, yeah, and you on one of our podcasts, you mentioned just Google Event Horizon hell scene, and it's like 5 seconds long, and it will haunt you. But let's not do negative stuff. Let's talk about positive things.
That's right. We're talking about basking in how beautiful life.
Let's bask in the
beauty.
Let
me ask you,
yeah.
What made you say that?
Say what?
Just, life is beautiful. Well, you said, I appreciate this. You said, Joe, you're beautiful. Life is beautiful.
Well, your intro was beautiful. I'm inclined to compliment you in general, and then also when you do a good job. And the word beautiful came up, and that led to me saying that you're beautiful, and then I just want to say life is beautiful. I was trying to think of the name of somebody famous who's beautiful, but I kind of do that a little too much. So instead, I decided to just let you take over, and you did. And so
I like your celebrity name drops. I think they're beautiful. It's a lot like the Beastie Boys.
Oh, do they do a lot of celebrity name dropping?
Some would argue that they did it so much that it was a cheap trick. And they basically found a way to rhyme lines with any celebrity that came to their head. They could just say that celebrity's name and then do a silly rhyme about it. And if they're not doing that, this is another criticism of the Beastie Boys. If they're not dropping names, then they've already spent a few lines introducing themselves or each other. So like, and they do that, like they'll do that every time they come back in. Like it's true. I just really like it. I like that about the Beastie Boys. Every like if Mike D is rapping and then he's got to introduce MCA.
Yeah.
MCA will then introduce himself.
Yeah.
and then maybe drop a couple of names like Ted Danson or, you know, Phyllis Diller or something. And then he has to introduce Ad Rock.
Yeah.
And that's Ad Rock's cue to introduce him fucking self. And he'll name drop a couple times. And then guess what? It's Mike D's turn again. But you can't just have Mike D come back in without introducing him. And Mike D must introduce himself again.
Yeah.
And this is a one of those arguments against.
No, that's an argument for it. We could do that. You and I could do that. Like, I'll start ranting on a subject, and then I'll bring you in, and you take over the rant. We don't have to rhyme. It doesn't have to be like a rap, but it can be a rant. Like, I could say something along the lines of, Joe, don't you hate it when you get a burrito out of the freezer and you stick it in the microwave, and then you, like, heat it up, but you didn't heat it up all the way, and it's cold in the center? Joe, take it.
Well, you know what? A lot of times that means you just got to pull out a fork and you got to stir it up a little bit, and then you got to put it back in. And don't put it right back in the center. You got to put it on the side so it spins around the side. That's where the microwave really works. And then you pull it back out and it's steaming hot, and that's all you got. Jason?
Well, this is Jason. Let me say something here. I hear what you're saying, and I know what you're trying to talk about, and I feel you, I do, but I think it might be something about the way they freeze these burritos. I think that if there was a more professional way of freezing a burrito, there would be a better way of microwaving them, and that makes me think about microwaves and waves and sound waves, and why come Bose has not made a microwave, Joe? Take it.
Hey, I'm going to take you back to the frozen burrito, because if you have a frozen burrito, you don't eat it forwards, you eat it backwards, and eating it backwards means you stick up your butt, and you have a frozen burrito, and boom, it's in your butt.
and then we name drop. We say Ted Danson and Joey Fatone or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, we could do that.
What we just did there was a lot of fun, by the way. But what came to my mind immediately was, if we podcasted exactly like the Beastie Boys. See, we didn't there. I didn't introduce you. It would be a really weird way to podcast. Like, let's say it was me, you, and Shags, or like me, you, and Ryan. To podcast like the Beastie Boys, I'd have to, every single time I started talking, I'd have to be like, I'd say something like this. Oh, that was really stupid what you just said, Jason. And by the way, my name is Joe. Some people call me the J-O-E. you're the podcast-y, and I'm the podcaster. And I want to say something, a little something about Chris Pratt, because I think he's a fucking idiot, because he supports a church that is anti-LGBT. And now I'd like to hand it over to Ryan, and this is Ryan, my friend Ryan, on the podcast. Then Ryan would come in, and he'd be like, "Hello, baby. This is Ryan. What you just said was interesting, Joe, but not interesting enough for me to comment on it." And then so forth. He would then pass the mic to you. You'd have to introduce yourself.
Well, let's do that.
As I did this out loud, I don't think we would want to do that.
No,
if we podcasted like the Beastie Boys. One, I don't think we have the talent of the Beastie Boys.
No,
we're not rapping. And now, see, Beastie Boys figured out this formula. By the way, they go way beyond that formula.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's an unfair thing to just pigeonhole them into that formula.
Right.
But they're rapping, and we're podcasting. If we tried to do that, it would just be a bigger yawn than the yawn of our show.
I don't know. I think we could do something like that. Get Shags and Ryan and everybody else and get up and do exactly that. We would have to, in advance, come up with some interesting ways to introduce ourselves. You know, Ryan could be like, "This is the white chocolate fog," and he'd do what you said. And Jason, what do you think? And I would say, "Well," and. Also, have you ever watched like a news coverage of something that's like happening in real time? They're like, you know, there's a shooting at the dock, and we're going to be here. And if you've just joined us, this is KLXPNJRY to the third power news, and we're at the dock. And they always introduce themselves like every 5 minutes, you know, like if you're just joining us. And so we could do it like that. It's like, hey, if you're just joining the podcast, this is Jason Edwards, also known as the White Chocolate Snog. And Ryan, I like what you were saying, but I think we should try it sometime.
Well, you just made me realize that I think certain broadcasters, you know, now it's podcasting, right? But radio, I don't know if you listened to a lot of like morning zoo stuff, like talk shows, even like AM radio shows. A lot of it is just maintaining some momentum, and they'd say, well, it's 15 minutes to the top of the hour. Like, So they never run out of stuff to say. And I think the skill set at that point was that you would have these little things to fall back on all the time. And you would know your agenda. So if you run out of something to say and you're thinking, then you can talk about what's about to happen. Like, you know, we're going to have traffic here in a minute. This is what time it is. And it allows this to keep going. I think that we do the same thing, except we don't have any reliable tools.
Well, we would have to practice, and I think we would practice live, and we would make our listeners suffer as we practiced. You know something else? You made me remember something. You know something else that Nosecasters do that I picked up on a while ago, and now I sometimes do, especially when I'm reading books to my son? When they get to the end of a paragraph or the end of a thing that they're talking about, before they transition to the next thing they're talking about, they slow way down. Here, I'll give you an example. I just put up a random page here on the internet, and it goes, let's see. It's something about Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss's long-lost manuscript, What Pet Should I Get?, will be out on July 28th. You ever notice how they do that?
That's one of those tools, I think, that I'm mentioning. And I was listening to last night's podcast, and I said we have no reliable tools. That's true. But we do the same type of thing. In fact, last night we recorded a show, and you did something I didn't realize it was a fallback for you. Correct me if I'm wrong on this.
Okay.
But, like, we'll reach the end, like, suddenly some topic will come screeching to a halt, you know? And you were like, actually, Joe, I wanted to bring something up, and I wanted to ask you if you are of a mind if – and then there was this long pause, and you were like, I don't have anything. Sorry. But I realized, like, that really did give you a chance to just cultivate something. And it really sounded like you already had something, but you didn't.
Well,
you were giving yourself a chance to, like, load your weapon.
Right.
I'm not talking about your penis. I'm talking about your brain.
My brain is my weapon.
And nothing happened. But then we both laughed at it.
Right.
So I guess – and there – again, that's not a reliable tool. It's maybe a cheap trick that we use. But
it's
if and when we get stuck, we'll genuinely laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
At least it's authentic, I suppose.
I definitely – I'm not the only person who's done stand-up and have seen other comedians do this where – they'll tell a joke and they'll get no response, and so they'll call out that they didn't get a response. So nobody thinks that's funny. I think it's funny. And people will laugh at that. And that's the same kind of thing. It's like if I say, Joe, actually, you know what? Okay, I got nothing. It's better than just struggling for 5 seconds of dead air to go, Selma Blair's really got nice shoes, or, you know, just something stupid.
We also do that.
We do that, yes.
And that's when we're out, when we do not know which unreliable tool to use, we just stutter ourselves into nothingness.
Which is why
that happens from time to time.
It does.
I think that used to happen more than it happens now. I like to think that there's some sort of skill or craft to what we do, and that we've improved.
Well, if there's nothing else, there's arrogance augmented by muscle memory. So we just think we're the shit, and we just kind of put it on autopilot and go. And that seems to be good enough. I mean, why not, right? I mean, it's how I do everything else in my life. My wife used to hate that about our sex life, but now she kind of appreciates it, that I just think I'm good, do what I need to do, and I'm done. And she doesn't worry about anything. She doesn't do any work. So, yeah.
Do you spare her the, do you like that? Do you like that? Do you like that? So... You know, if you're forcing somebody else to like it, maybe that spoils the moment.
No, she has gotten very good at not listening to anything I say ever. So it doesn't matter what I say. She just, it all works out. But we don't want to talk about that. I don't know what we want to talk about. We don't want to talk about that. We don't talk about other things.
Yeah, we can change the subject. You were talking about comedy. I just saw this. Apparently it's from 2016, but I just saw this documentary called Dying Laughing.
Okay.
Have you seen that?
No.
Well, it made me think of you, and it made me think of the podcast. You know, ostensibly we're trying to present comedy as an art form, and we're trying to improv it to some, we're trying to improvise it to some degree, and then we bring bits and whatever. I'm like, well, okay, this is our effort is comedy. That's the thing. But stand up. I'm watching this entire documentary was like, it was Sarah Silverman and Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, and like Theo Von, who I think is fucking really funny. The whole thing was just interviewing them about different aspects of stand-up, and and a lot of it had to do with, okay, what is it like to die on stage? Yeah. Another one was, how do you handle hecklers? And that was great. I love that part. And Billy Connolly was in there. I got to say this really quick, just a side note. They're like, okay, how do you handle hecklers, Billy Connolly? And he was like, and I can't do a Scottish accent really, but he was like, well, I normally can't really hear them. And so I just react maniacally to them. Someone will be like, hey, Billy, we love you. And it's like, shut the fuck up! Anyway, I'm not doing that justice. Billy Connolly's great. No, I hear you saying.
That
but
show,
then,
yeah, go ahead.
So they kind of go through all these things, and then it gets a little bit, some of the, this one comedian like started crying because he was recalling like the worst time he ever died on stage.
Yeah.
And I was getting a little choked up because I'm like, oh man, the way this documentary is set up, they really tell the story of kind of the inner experience of a stand-up comedian and how some of these comedians are so invested emotionally in the moment that dying on stage is terrible, and like the craft of handling hecklers is a really important, like how you deal with that says a lot about, you know, who you are as an artist and, you know, stuff like that. So I was thinking about you because I've never done stand up.
You should.
And I'm probably just going to try it one day to see if I can even come close to, you know, success. not success. I mean, just making people laugh. I'm, you know, at all. And I know you've been on stage many times, so I kind of wanted to like interview you a little bit about the different aspects that they brought up on this show. The whole time I was watching it, I was thinking about you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Well
yeah.
So,
go ahead, interview me. I will tell you because you know, I am not professional in any way. I have like 1/1,000,000,000% of the experiences the other ones have had, which makes me an expert. So yeah, ask me questions.
All right. So here are some of the things that they were talking about, and this did remind me. I'm like, well, maybe I am kind of like a stand-up comedian. I do the notes thing on my phone.
Yeah,
and I guess that's an easy one. You know, stand-up comedians, a lot of these comedians, before there were smartphones, they had little notebooks, and a lot of them, the common theme was, you know, they're always just writing shit down.
Yep,
they're just always writing shit down. Because if something funny comes to your head and you don't write it down, then you've lost an opportunity to capture that and put it on stage somehow.
Yeah.
This one comedian was like, "Oh man, god damn it, I fucked it up." He was reading through his notes that he had from that day.
Yeah.
And he said a couple that were like so terrible and offensive that he actually like looked shocked and looked up at the camera and he was like, oh, that one was kind of fucked up. I don't think I should have said that out loud on camera, which I thought was funny. But what is your writing of jokes process?
Well, it's just that. I mean, I hardly do it anymore. Every once in a while, I'll think of something funny and write it down. But when my comedy thing kind of started, when my dad said he's going to do stand-up, and so when I heard that, I thought, oh, I'll write him some jokes. And so I sat down and wrote. I'm trying to bring it up on my Word document now. I wrote like, I don't know, 50, 60 jokes. I had them all linked up and everything. And they're all untested and therefore probably crap. But yeah, it's my opinion, writing jokes is really easy and is not how one should judge a comedian's value, right? Because it's like... It's more about
break down what the really quality aspects or traits of a comedian are, then, if not a good joke writer.
Well, so I feel like, and this is something I never did, that a good comedian, it's no mistake that a good comedian can end up doing movies and TV shows, right? Because you're putting on this persona and you're holding it all together. I watched today, I don't know how I came across it, but I was on YouTube and I watched this comedian who I'd never seen before doing 5 minutes on some showcase somewhere. I mean, it was televised, probably some cable channel, but judging from the size of the audience and the way the stage was decorated, he was probably paid an okay amount for this. And his jokes were just okay. There was nothing about his jokes that were amazing. And he wasn't even like his persona on stage was something like, oh man, this guy is going to go places. But he held it all together and he did a good job. He was like a journeyman, so to speak, if you know what I'm talking about. When I talk about journeyman in the sense of crafts work, right?
That level.
That level of like...
At a journeyman level.
If you said, hey, I need somebody to do 10, 15 minutes. They don't have to be amazing, but they can't fuck it up. You'd hire that guy. You could hire me. You could hire...
It's like a minimum level of professionalism.
Yeah, yeah. And to obtain that level of it takes nothing more than exposure and practice. The joke writing is just the least part of it. I mean, if you gave me money, I could sit down and write jokes all day long for the rest of my life. It's that straightforward and simple. There's processes you can use, but after a while, it becomes like a reflex. You see something that's a little bit non-congruous with expectations, and you've got a joke. Here's one. Saw a sign at a restaurant that said Braille menus available. Now, how would someone who needs a Braille menu see that?
Okay.
Right? That's not going to knock you down and make you piss your pants. You're laughing so fucking hard. But, it gets the job done, and that's the kind of jokes we're talking about. Now, if Seinfeld, who's extremely talented, or Sarah Silverman, or... Chris Rock had that joke, they could do talk in the context they put it in and the timing, and you would laugh your balls off. You think, oh my god, that's amazing. But it wasn't the joke, it was the person. That's really what it comes down to.
And that's not just timing, that's utilizing your personality.
Yeah,
I mean, like the entirety of your personality, the tone of your voice, all of your nonverbal expression, your facial expression included in that.
And it's not fair because, I mean, this is me bitching and moaning, but, you know, Seinfeld is at a level of fame such that he can tell my jokes and people would fall down laughing. My ex just joined one of those 12-step programs, but it's for Sadomasochist Anonymous, so it's like a 415-step program. He could tell that joke and people would be like, the guy's fucking brilliant. I tell the joke and they're like, oh, yeah, 415, that's funny, okay. You know what I'm saying? And it's because he's famous, right? And I feel a little bit sorry for him, but I don't because he's rich as balls. But a little bit sorry for him because I don't know that he could ever genuinely surprise people with his comedy anymore. He'd have to go to a country where they don't know him, which is impossible unless he speaks their language, and tell them jokes. Which is not to say he doesn't work hard. I know he does. Which is not to say that he's not talented. I know he is. But to compare his type... If I were going to make a documentary about comedians, I would not interview Seinfeld or Jamie Foxx or Sarah Silverman or any of those people. I would not interview them because I don't give a fuck what they say. They're rich and famous. Everything they say about comedy is based on the fact that they're rich and famous. They can talk about the days when they were, you know, just starting out and getting heckled and bombing, and they can cry, whatever. The very fact that they're in a documentary already says something. You know what I mean?
To be fair to this documentary, the dude that cried, I didn't recognize him. That doesn't mean he isn't super famous. I mean, but there were like a group of, I think they made sure to include some of the comedians that aren't like super huge.
Okay.
But I don't know. I hear about people that are evidently they're super famous, but I've never heard of them before. So right. I don't know. But that's the funniest thing. Jamie Foxx was in the documentary. The funniest thing that he said was, they're like, well, you know, how do you push through dying on stage now? Because they went into this whole thing where, like, I don't care how famous you are, no one is exempt from dying on stage. Like, no one's exempt from a bad night. And so they asked Jamie Foxx, and he was like, oh, let me tell you how I get through it. I'm really fucking rich, man.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm super famous, and I've got a lot of money. And, so I'm okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everybody, you could hear the whole crew. I mean, it was genuinely funny because it was to him, it was kind of a ridiculous. I think Jamie Foxx is right on board with you. He was like, you could tell, like, yeah, he's died on stage and he didn't like it. And it, like, how do you deal with it now? Fuck you. I'm fine. Yeah. Fine. I'm Jamie Foxx. Academy Award winner Jamie Foxx. Yeah.
When you
multimillionaire.
And it's true for, I think, almost any discipline. You reach a point where it's no longer a matter of, I want your approval of what I'm doing, whether it's telling jokes or writing books or acting or, I don't know, dancing or, shoot, even if it's like you're a Taco Bell manager, you reach a point where you switch from, I want your approval, to, no, you want my approval. I'm going to gift you with my joke. And if you don't laugh, that's your fault, not mine, because I'm the expert here.
And you sure you haven't seen this documentary?
No, I haven't seen it.
Jerry Seinfeld said, like, the dude said, so you're not trying to win their approval. And he goes, and this is a quote because it stuck out to me. He said, no, I want their sublimation.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. And then he kind of laughed and he was like, he's like, you're kind of thinking I'm kind of a scary guy now, aren't you? I'm like, no, Jerry Seinfeld, you're not scary. I think he was genuine about that, though. That's a whole other part of the documentary that – to get a crowd like in the palm of your hand, mm-hmm. what is that? What are the kind of psychodynamics behind that? And a lot of them had to say it actually has to do with almost like mesmerizing a crowd.
Mm-hmm. Well,
getting them into your rhythm and into a kind of like a call response type of thing. So to keep their attention, not necessarily their approval, but to mesmerize them.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's not something that only professional stand-up comedians ever experience. I mean, I'm sure you have. I think the term is held forth. You're at a party or some gathering, and there seems to be a little mini audience in front of you as you're regaling them with something. And it's some stuff that you're relating that's true, like you're telling them a story, but you're also making up shit on the spot based on their responses, right? I'm sure that has happened to you. Am I wrong? Yeah, and that's happened to me, too. It's like, yeah, they're in the palm of my hand. I can say almost anything now because they're with me. They're willing to work with me. Sorry, that's my dad trying to FaceTime me. I don't know why. Anyway.
No shit, can we talk to him?
Not through FaceTime. I don't know why he's doing that. He knows the baby's asleep and there's no other reason to use FaceTime, but...
Well, is everything okay?
Yeah. If there was something wrong, he wouldn't use FaceTime. He's like, hey, I want you to see the gunshot wound.
Good
I
point.
I want you to...
How silly of me.
Your mother's dead. Want to see the corpse? No, it's not.
God damn, dude.
Yeah, no.
All right, well, so speaking of dying, tell me... And we won't do this the whole show, but I did want to get through these items. I was thinking about it. Have you ever died on stage?
No, not really. And it's not because I'm good. It's just because I never did it enough to get to the point where that was a thing. I mean, I've definitely gone on stage and people didn't laugh through my whole set. But that was because I was on for 3 minutes. I was rushing through it. And I mean, there's a difference between nobody laughed and dying. Like, nobody laughing is something you can deal with. Dying is like, you're just like, ugh. You know, and
where it becomes so unbearably awkward.
It's just
like
awkward.
The energy in the room becomes unbearable.
Yeah. I remember one time I was at a open mic. I may have told the story before. And I was in the middle because you sign up and there are like 30 comedians who are going to get on there, 3 minutes each. And I happened to be in the middle, which was not too bad. When it's 30, you want to be a little bit closer to the front, but middle is better than at the end. And the room was getting better and better and better. Each comedian was playing off the last one's energy and was building and building and building. I was like, oh, this is going to be great because I can just tell my jokes and skate through this. And then the guy who was up right before me killed everything. I don't mean killed in the good way. He just, the room, it was the most awkward, weird thing. And I don't remember what he said, but it was like, it was dying. He died so bad he killed the rest. He killed the next four people who got up on stage. And so I got up there and I was like, wow. I actually said this to the audience. I said, there is no way I can be funny now. And they giggled. And I said, well, maybe. And they giggled some more. I said, no, wait, hear my jokes. You'll find out I'm not funny at all. And they laughed a lot. And that was the best laugh I got, actually. The best laugh I got was telling them they weren't going to laugh
nice
at me.
Nice work.
So I kind of helped the next person, right? But my set, I didn't die so much. I mean, people didn't laugh because they just weren't in the mood to laugh at that particular moment. They giggled a little with the tittered. That was fine, but I didn't die. I didn't take the room Like, I didn't take the wind out of people's lungs, I guess. I didn't.
Well, what occurs to me is, you know, people talk about timing and, you know, your tone. And even I was talking about, you know, your entire personality. It's yeah. But it's more than that. And I think that's what the whole thing about the room is. Like, whatever people are receiving you, the energy of that person or those people, be it a small group of people or a large one, the energy, their ability to receive comedy has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely.
Like, and I get, you know, because I listen back to our show to do montages and just to, I don't know, torture myself or whatever.
Sure.
And I'll listen back to the same fucking thing. One day you'll go on, you'll tell some story, and I will, like, I'll be, you know, washing the dishes or something, and I have to stop and, like, bend over. I'm laughing so fucking hard at your story, right? Well, and then I don't think it's not a repetition thing, I don't think, because I heard you say it the first time when we were on the podcast.
Yeah.
I hear it again, I laugh way harder, and then maybe a couple months later I'm looking for montage and I hear the same story again. But guess what? This time I feel like shit and I hear the same story and it has no comedic value to me at all.
What
I'm saying is I feel like sometimes people – well, everybody is a kind of like a satellite that's able to pick up on comedy, and everybody's satellite is different. But if you get a bunch of people on the same wavelength, that means something too.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So the exact same delivery, exact same timing, inflection of the voice – nonverbals, everything, but if you're playing to a room that isn't picking up your frequency, then it's a shitty joke no matter what.
Yeah. And the way you combat that is by just doing it over and over and over and over again. Be as consistent as you can, tell the joke the same way, you know, adjust it so that it works more times than not, obviously, but yeah, you can't live and die by that one set, whatever it is. Now, and this is what the hard work of doing comedy is. Like I said, it's not the writing. It's the getting up and being there over and over and over and over again, and yet somehow maintaining some kind of freshness and nuance, right? Because you want people to think that you're just talking to them. You don't want them to feel like you're reciting something. So there's a lot of work, and that's why I decided not to do it. I recognized this, like, as soon as I was there, I realized you have to make yourself miserable for a long time just for the chance to have somebody maybe glance at you. It's like if you heard, let's say you heard, Joe, you're a musician. Let's say you heard that Bruce Dickens, is that his name? The famous producer. You heard he was going to be in Iowa, right? So what you, no, not Iowa, Ohio. So you went to a city in Ohio because there's a chance he would be in that city. There's a chance he would be on the same street as you. There's a chance he would be looking at you. And there's a chance that he would ask you to play him a song. Each one of those is more unlikely than the next. But you have to do the work just to have that chance. And if you're that one person in a million who happens to be there when Bruce Dickinson wants someone to play him a song, now you're famous. But it's not because you are talented. It's because you got lucky. And I am not willing to do that work. Not willing. Mm-mm, no. I write jokes all day long and I'm happy with that. I can do a shitty podcast with my cousin because we think we're funny, but
it is satisfying.
And I feel like I haven't seen this documentary.
It's, you know, I think for us it's a fairly low risk endeavor.
It's a no risk endeavor. I mean, honestly, what could happen? So the worst thing that's happened to us is people have misinterpreted what we mean, but then they give us a chance to correct them, and so that's not so bad, right? Somebody might say, oh, I thought when you guys said this you meant this. I'm like, no, that's not what we meant. And they go, oh, okay, and we're fine, right? Whereas these people, like, I have met people trying to do stand-up and that's all that they do. They turn down decent paying jobs and stable relationships, and they turn down a good life because they want to work at this, and they work and they work and they work, and they'll be in their 60s with no retirement accounts and no family and no friends and, worst of all, no fame whatsoever, you know. And one person could say,
again, it seems like that you've seen the documentary, but it's just that you know a bunch of stand-up comedians, and you were, or I'd still, yeah, I consider you one. You've recently gotten on stage, but that heavy-hearted, they really focused on that for a little while. There's like a heavy-hearted thing where if you devote your life to it, actually, mm-hmm. there's a lot of sacrifice. It's not amenable to Mm-mm. to healthy lifestyle and no. healthy relationships.
No, it's not. And I think the same is true for a lot of art. If you want to be a painter,
working musicians to a certain degree,
absolutely, yeah.
Have that problem. I think a lot of studio, if you're super good and you become a studio musician, that's awesome. But see, like if you're touring with Rat, I don't know why I came up with Rat.
I love it.
Rat.
That's the name of today's show. Anyway, touring with that's Rat.
You're probably not in a healthy situation if you're touring with Rat. Actually, Rat's probably touring right now, and they're probably they lived through all the most dangerous years of their musicianship and rock starhood. And well, actually, I know one guy from Rat died of AIDS.
Really? Wow, that's too bad.
But I actually think Rat is maybe touring now, and I think that dudes that rock stars that make it that long, they fall into a way to be healthy about it, I think.
Oh wow. Rat is going to be at
Rat with two T's, by the way.
Yeah, two T's. They're going to be on May 4th at the Domination Festival in Mexico, I guess Mexico City, and on May 11th they'll be at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi. Awesome. They're at the Wildflower Festival in Texas after that. Fantastic Fourth. Let's see if they're coming near you or I. No. But yes, they are still touring. And there's a picture of them on their webpage. God damn, these guys look old. But they're still wearing eyeliner. So you got to respect that. But yeah, I think that if you're in any kind of...
they look like a bunch of old grandmas? Like
they do, yeah.
They look like cougars? Like going out on the town.
Well, I mean, they're all male.
Like fuck young studs.
They're men, so.
Yeah, I know, but are they still like, you know, if you're glamming it up?
Oh yeah, no. They,
you know, the whole idea was to look like a female stripper, I think.
Was that? I know Rat was in the same era as the glam rockers, but did they glam it up as much as like Enemy Poison?
For some reason, I envision Rat with the big hair and the thick makeup and even like some lingerie looking
oh no you're
clothing
right. Yeah, you're right, sorry. I was in my mind I was picturing Quiet Riot. I don't know why, and that I think they, but yeah, Rat, they've got the
were
makeup.
They more just kind of like metal
I don't know, I just,
as opposed to like drag.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the Rat now, and yes, it's definitely exactly as you expressed it. Hey, but more power to them. I think that's great that they so they're a good example. Like, you and I are making fun of them, okay? And it's all in good fun. It's, you know, we don't disrespect these guys.
Yeah, kind
of. I mean, we're making fun of them sort of, but whatever. I mean, but at the same time, the reason why we are making fun of them is because we don't know anything else about them except that they put on makeup and played shitty rock music at a time when music in general was shit, and they're still doing it, right?
Yeah. I think it's wonderful. And by the way, there's nothing inherently bad with like a bunch of old dudes, you know.
No.
Dressing up in drag. I don't think they consider it drag, but to me, that, like, look at the, you know, the style of hair bands was really like, let's dress up like our groupies. Really.
Well, here's what I'm getting at, and you're absolutely right. Whatever it took to get them where they got, they did. But for every Rat, for every Quiet Riot, for every, I don't know, a Poison or whatever, there are 1,000 old dudes who right now, old dudes who still wear the eyeliner, still have the long hair, and still go to open mics in bullshit Arkansas and play shitty hard rock, who will never do anything else, and that's all they've ever done. And they're not famous, and they're not respected, and they don't go on tour, but they said, I'm going to sacrifice my life to this. And it got them nothing. And that's the same for comedians, for novelists, for everybody who doesn't go and get a 9-to-5 job. Do I respect that? Yes. Do I want that for myself? Fuck no. No.
Right.
No. I just don't have that kind of integrity.
And I also want to say that... By the way, you know the unreliable tools of killing time that I was talking about?
Yes.
One of mine is to say, so I wanted to say that, and I slow down, and there it is. I get a minute to think about what I'm about to say. So I want to say that there's a lot of shit talk about hair bands. A lot of that shit talk comes from me.
Yeah.
But maybe you understand this. There's something about hair bands that I find super entertaining.
Well, sure.
You know, it's not music that, like, you know, I've listened to like a Radiohead song or a Tool song, and that, like, I get really emotionally connected to it, and I take it very seriously, and it gives me this feeling that no hair band ever could, that like this connection with the music. But hair bands are super entertaining and kind of just make me happy. It's all positive, and I think that was intentional on their part. Like, this is about partying and who gives a fuck, and you know what I mean, and sex, and we're having a good time, you know, and I appreciate that sincerely. Yeah. And also, there are bands that I really like. I love the, you know, I really connect to it, and I think that the songwriting is great, and the style of the music, everything about it, the message behind it is great. And there are members of that band that probably cannot technically perform as good as any lead guitarist from a hair band.
Right.
Lead guitarists from hair bands, most of them are like classically trained, and they can play so fucking fast that they melt your face off of your skull.
Mm-hmm.
But that's technical prowess. They're putting it's showboating. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a good melody, really. It's a magic trick. It's a trick. It's a look how fucking fast I can play rock. We're gonna fucking rock.
Yeah,
and then, you know, there are bands that I really like. I would say the Johnny Greenwood, who plays guitar for Radiohead, I think really one of my favorite bands ever. That dude, I don't think he can just shred. Like, the lead guitar player of Rat could out-shred Johnny Greenwood any day of the week. And I'm just saying that flat out. There's a lot to be said about hair bands, but I'm not going to pop in. I'm not going to hit play on an album from Rat and be like, this is so fucking awesome and meaningful to me. Like,
but you will sit down for an hour and watch Rat videos.
I just have a general appreciation for different aspects of hair band, the craft of hair banding.
Well, the craft of hair banding. I think, there you go. I mean, if you're like, okay, I've got a list here in front of me of like the hair metal bands, like all of them, I guess. And I agree that there's, I'm never going to sit down and listen to, like, on my earphones, Lizzie Borden for an hour. But I'll sit in front of YouTube and watch their videos, because there's a lot more going on than just the music, right? And if I can take this idea and very weirdly take it back to stand-up comedy, I can watch Lizzie Borden albums because there's lots going on, even though I don't necessarily find the music all that compelling. And I can watch a comedian who I think is great, even though I don't have a lot of respect for the joke writing process, because that comedian has brought more than just, you know, set up punch, right? And yeah. I think that's what it all comes down to. And again, I keep breaking this out to other art forms, but I think that an artist isn't somebody who just creates an art, but somebody who brings to a piece, whatever, that's a dance or a painting or a book, they bring to it more than the genre requires to be complete. Right? Any douchebag can tell a story. And any douchebag could probably end up, if you, you know, paid him enough money, tell a story in 80,000 words. But a good novelist is somebody who, when you get done reading, you're like, I get it. I never would have thought of that, but now that I've seen it, I get it. And that's the same for comedy, it's the same for movies and songs and all that stuff. Speaking of books, I want to change the subject.
Yeah, so by the way, welcome to the comedy episode of JBC, and also the hair band.
The hair music. Band.
episode of JBC.
I'm going to change the subject.
And books.
Books. Yeah, exactly. So this happened to me yesterday. I got done reading a book. It's called Lexicon. It's by Max Berry. It's pretty good. So I get done reading it, and I go to Goodreads because that's where I like log all the books that I read so that I can keep track of what I've read. So I go to Goodreads to say, I've read this book, and apparently I had already read this book. 4 years ago, in 2015, I had read this book, and I wrote a review. So I read the review I wrote, and I everything I wrote made sense, and it was definitely me who wrote it, but I still don't remember having read it before. I have no recollection whatsoever.
Wow.
Now, none. And this
to me,
is not,
that means, because I know that you read, you know, 52, at least 52 books a year, yes. Some years, or yes. Maybe every year?
Every year, yeah, at minimum.
So if you're reading that many books, I'm sure that you can lose track. And
yeah.
And I mean, how many reviews have you written, though? To not remember writing a fucking review, you must write reviews of a lot of the books.
Well, I always,
maybe not a lot of them, but enough to fucking forget that you wrote a review. It's a lot. Or Jason, you have fucking memory problems.
It's definitely that I have memory problems for sure. Because this isn't the first time this has happened. A couple weeks ago, I finished reading a book called Getting Off, which is, everyone should read it. It's by Lawrence Block, writing under the pseudonym Jill Emerson, and it's a novel about a woman who goes out, picks up men, goes back to their place, has sex with them, has amazing sex with them, kills them, takes all their money, and moves to a different town. And she just does this over and over and over and over again. And again, I read the book, and I went to Goodreads, and apparently I had read it before. And the first time I read it, I didn't like it as much as the second time. But I have, again, no memory of having read this book at all. None. And I don't think I'm a stupid person. So I'm chalking it up. Have you ever had this experience, Joe, where you went and did something only to find out you did it before and you just don't remember?
I'm sure that's happened to me. I'm struggling to find an example. But as I get older, think about that. I know I've done that before, but I can't remember.
Right,
like,
right.
So I am getting to that point. It's not like I'm a doddering old man.
Right, right.
But I do. I've had enough experiences now where, like, yeah, they'll repeat themselves, and I'll be like, oh, fuck, I already did that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm talking about not just after you do it, you realize, oh, I've done that before. It's like there's some record of your having done it. You're like, okay, I see the record, but I still don't remember. And I can – one, I'm aging, so that's probably part of it. And two – I read books very quickly and forget about them as soon as I do. I'm not a good reader, so that's probably part of it. But I'm also, and I've been very open about this, I take anti-depression, anti-anxiety medication, and one of the side effects of one of them is just straight up, your memory doesn't work as well, which is something that would cause anxiety, but because I'm taking it, I'm not anxious about it, which is great. And I think that's like the true... A drug should make you not have the thing that you're taking the drug for, even if the thing that happens as a side effect would make the thing you need to take the drug for worse. That didn't make any sense.
It's just a risk-benefit analysis.
I'm actually happier not remembering things. Not to go off on another tangent, but if you told me, hey, here's a chocolate cake, I said, I want to eat it. They said, well, wait, it will give you memory loss. It's like, give me two pieces. This is a good thing. And I don't have traumatic memories. It's not like I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to remember that time I was butt-raped by a man in a bear costume. No, that never happened to me. And if it did, I'd probably want to remember it. But my point is...
Okay. My point maybe there's a video of it somewhere.
Maybe.
You could just relive it.
I could,
by the way,
go watch
it
the video.
Has happened to you. You just don't remember.
I just don't remember.
You told me the story once.
I was butt raped by a man.
Apparently, there is a video on the internet somewhere.
It's by a man in a bear costume.
I hate to break it to you, but
no, it's fine.
You were butt raped by a guy in a bear costume.
I think that would be so wonderful if somebody came up and they're like, "I'm going to make you miserable. Here, watch this," and you watch it and go, "Is that me? Yeah. Am I getting butt raped by a guy in a bear costume? Yeah. What do you think about that?" And you're like, "That's fucking awesome. Why didn't you tell me about this before?"
Funny. I had it on my to do list,
that's
but now
great.
I can just cross that off. I already did it.
Bucket list. Thanks, dude. And they're like, what? No. I want you to be sad. No.
Fuck it list. I had to say
yeah,
that
the fuck it list. Yeah, but yeah, I read this book, and the thing is that I probably shouldn't tell this on the air, even though this isn't the air. But I recently found a way to get a hold of a metric fuck ton of books that I want to read and not pay for them, which is awesome. And I'm sure
you're a criminal.
I'm a criminal, and I'm pretty sure this is going to happen again and again and again. And if I can rely on this, that'd be great, because there's some books that I absolutely love, and I would love to read them for the first time again. Do you remember there's some books you've read, you're like, oh, they're so good, I want to forget I read it so I can do this all over again. Have you ever had that happen to you?
Yeah, I have. Well, here's the good thing about your condition, with the side effects of your meds. You can do that.
I'm hopeful, yeah.
You kind of already did, right?
Yeah, but not on purpose.
Well, that's not part of the story. You wrote a review that you didn't remember writing.
No, that was
which part, I still find that's amazing.
Oh, I don't remember most of the things I write. I am so arrogant and into myself that I will go to my folder full of things I've written and just browse through them, going, "That's pretty funny. Oh, that's great. I'm being entertained right now." You do the same thing. I know you do. I think most artists do. Honestly, I think there's artists who hate their own work and never look at it, and then there's others who, like, I'm my biggest fan. I'm a fucking hilarious dude, or I'm an awesome writer, a good painter, or dancer. Or
whatever. Well, I'm both, and I do retread, you know, stuff that I've done over the years from time to time, and well, sometimes if here's a weird thing, I wonder if other people have this experience. I will, if I like something, I'll beat it to death because I'm so happy with it that I'll, like, you know, like I've written a song, or like with the band I was in, I would record a song. If I liked it enough, I'd listen to it over and over again. I'm like, oh man, so just so happy with that. And then I kind of spoil it for myself.
Sure.
On the other side of things, I think I really do know. I know what I like. So if I make something that I like, I'm not just like pretending to like it. I really think I've done a good job. And I kind of prove that by having the opposite experience a lot. Because when I make something that I hate, it sucks. And what I used to do was kind of listen to it over and over again to try and like just wring like a wet rag, or I guess a dry rag, like trying to wring some sort of quality out of it. Like listen to it enough to where like I make excuses for it and try to like it, but it never works. If I make something that I don't like, I'm never going to like it. And right. So you just have to kind of grieve it or just set it aside. And as I get older, I just don't give a fuck. If I make something I don't like, I'm like, oh man, I could have done that better. And then, especially with the podcast, I just always get another chance to do more shit. I can just keep doing more and more shit. If I fuck up, or if something's just really terrible, I know it's on the internet forever, but in my mind, I can kind of let it fade into the past.
Sure, because there's always more coming up. Here's how maybe I can over-explain this in a very inadequate way. Let's pretend this has happened to you or is going to happen to you. No, it has happened because you're married. This can't happen to you now that you're married, but it has happened. A beautiful woman comes up to you in some appropriate manner, like at a bar or in a coffee shop, and you get to talking. One thing leads to another, and she gives you the most incredible blowjob that you've ever had, right?
Okay.
And it's just amazing, right? And it's all above board. There was no coercion. This isn't about sexism. This is all like, this is great stuff. This is pure. And then she gets done. She steps back. She says, okay, you ready for this? And she rips off her high-tech futuristic mask, and it's you. You went back in time to give yourself the blowjob that only you know how to give you. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then she says, now. That was amazing, wasn't it? You're like, that was amazing, but I am really freaked out right now, and I don't know if I'm gay all of a sudden or what. And you say, I'm going to make you forget this now, so that I remember to do it, so that you'll remember to do it when you're in the future than I am in now. And then your memory gets erased, and then you move forward in time. And so you don't remember until you do it, and then you make yourself forget so that you'll – you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah. That's
I think that's what it comes down to when you are appreciating your own stuff. You're just like, this delights me, but I have to be – a bit of an audience member in order for it to delight me. Otherwise, I'm just jerking off, right? And there's a difference between blowing yourself and jerking off, by the way. I mean, it's a big difference, right? huge, yeah. Right? I mean, we've all got backaches, so we know there's a difference. There's a big difference. But go ahead, sorry.
Well, I think maybe what's a little bit lonely about making stuff, whether it be comedy or music or whatever, if I can be my biggest fan, and that's fine, and to a certain extent that makes sense because you have your own taste, and so you can tailor the art.
Yeah, just especially if you swallow.
Future, just like your future self has tailored a blowjob for your past penis.
Yeah.
But what's lonely about it is, okay, this is tailored to my taste. Now, you do have to at least get to the point in your craft where you're able to live up to your own standards of entertainment.
Right.
So there's that. Okay, right. You pat yourself on the back for that, but like you can never that only guarantees that you can entertain yourself. And so if you want to share your art with other people and you want them to either laugh or connect with the emotion that you're conveying, you need to present it and get a response.
Well, I think that's what maybe I alluded to it, maybe I didn't, but yeah, you have to think enough of whatever it is you're doing in order to keep doing it with the hope, expectation, or even like the arrogant belief that other people will eventually think it's good too. I mean, there is, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think there's an artist out there. Let's talk about comedy. A comedian is like, my jokes are shit. They're terrible, but I'm going to keep doing it until somebody finds it funny. I never will, but somebody else will. No one's like that. I think deep down they're like, okay, no, this is good. This is worthy.
Yeah,
of
they
the
have
effort.
To be a fan of their own work. To
if not a fan, at least
extent.
Think it's worthy. Yeah, they have to. I don't know, but maybe that's not what it is. Maybe there's some comedians out there who are like, everybody on the planet is stupid. I am also stupid, but I'm a little bit smarter, and I know that these fucks will think this is funny. I don't think it's funny. I think it's dumb. But they'll laugh, and then nobody laughs because, you know, well, they didn't laugh because it's not funny. They didn't laugh because the reason is because I haven't honed the craft, so I will continue to hone the craft, but I still think this is shit. Maybe that's the case, but I just feel like that would be a really tough thing to maintain, you know? To say, I'm going to write novels that I know are terrible, but people are going to like them because people suck. I just don't think that... I could be wrong. Maybe that happens.
You don't think that ever happens? I bet it does for people that are super prolific and they've have some formula, perhaps, that really works that they are sick to fucking death of. I know it happens to musicians.
Well, yeah, but that's
they
not...
go out and they're playing the song they've played fucking thousands of times and they're like, I wish I didn't have to play this motherfucking song anymore. Some of those people, I think I've heard interviews with musicians where they're like, yeah, I've heard it a lot and maybe the fans enjoy it more than I do, but I appreciate that this song was my bread and butter and that it, you know, that I have a mansion I live in because of this song. So they don't like begrudge the song. They don't resent the song, but they don't enjoy it as much as the fans do.
No. I think that's the ultimate goal is to like create something that's more than yourself and that people take on and make it their own. That's a wonderful thing. No, I'm talking about all the time spent getting from I think this song is shitty to I recognize that the shitty song has made me a lot of money. I don't think it ever goes like that. It's like, well, I think the song is good enough to put the effort into. And then they might get sick of it later. In fact, I think most of them do.
Yeah, but yeah. At that song's inception, they're a fan of their work.
Right.
I think my father would tell you that Dean Koontz might actually, as he writes a book, he fucking hates it because it's the same goddamn book that he wrote 100 times before, but he knows that there's a huge audience out there that's just going to fucking gobble it up. Is that an exception?
No.
Am I missing something?
No, that's definitely true. Like I said, I think writing in general is easy, and if you come up with a formula and people like it, again, if somebody said to me, we need you just to write jokes all day, whether you think they're funny or not, give them to us and we'll give them to the right people to perform. I could do that. And I don't have to think they're funny at all. I just say, yeah, just whatever. If Dean Koontz has got an audience, good for him. But I bet his first book that he wrote, he was not thinking, oh, this is crap. It's only now that he's famous he realizes he can phone it in.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well, so to bring this back to me, because I'm a narcissist.
Yeah. And you've got 45 seconds. Go.
Okay. Well, we've created a bubble here that's real safe for me, and mm-hmm. I think reliably you are my fan and I am your fan.
Absolutely.
And so we just bring stuff, and we don't, we have no problem. Like if you're not at the top of your game, you bring something that's less funny than something you've done before. I don't care, and it's not like you've disappointed me, and, right. and the, vice versa, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do, you know, I would like to share what we do with more and more people, mm-hmm. but deep down, I don't think, maybe I'm back and forth as to whether or not it is of a quality where it can be enjoyed by many, many, many people. Like, I think maybe it's just a small group of people that have the same taste as you and I to enjoy what we do.
Well,
I don't know, but I do want, I have to admit, I like many artists, I hope that many people can listen to what I do and enjoy it and share the laughter with me.
I think
that, isn't that cheesy?
No, I don't think it's cheesy at all. I think that the desire to be appreciated and liked and valued for the work, whatever, even if it's a tiny little bit, you want that. And that's totally normal. I think that's fine. I think that the hurdle between what we do and us getting to being liked and accepted by everybody is nothing more than packaging and production. Like, if we got a good publicist who, or production company or agency who decided that they were going to pitch us to the right audiences and do all the things they need to do to fit it to the audiences. In other words, if we're willing to sell out, and Joe, I am, then yeah, we can achieve that. I don't think there's
me too.
I don't think there's anybody out there who would like listen to us and go, this is so foreign to my existence that I will destroy it. The worst that happens is like, eh, it's not my cup of tea, right? You know, it's
right.
Like, yeah. But we're not.
Well,
we're not,
if we were, it wouldn't hurt, I don't think, for us to be rejected by millions of people.
No.
I just appreciate more and more, and I do have a yearning to have more and more people like it. Now,
yeah.
If it were broadcast to fucking, you know, 80 million people and everyone was like, Jesus Christ, turn it off, this is terrible, I'd be like, okay, well, Jason and I guess we'll just have to laugh at each other then. I at least that's what I tell myself.
I don't think that would ever happen, honestly. I think that there's like I got to think of the math of it, but if you get to the point, however you get to it, I don't know how you do, but if you get to the point where you're being broadcast to 800 million people, the only way everyone will hate you is if you're a Catholic priest raping children. We know that happens. We hate them all. We want them to die and die violently. And I'm not ashamed to say that. But what we do,
except for the Catholic Church itself, which they protect. They protect.
No, they want them to die too, because they want the problem to go away. But that's a whole other episode. My point is this.
Yeah, okay.
All we're doing is talking bullshit to each other. And it's not forced on anyone. If you don't like it, that's totally cool. Just turn it off. And we don't have a problem with that. So in some ways, entertainment is sort of like protected in that sense, because anybody who tells you suck, you can always say back to them, then why did you pay attention? Why didn't you turn it off as soon as it started sucking? I think you're the one with the problem, buddy, not me. And that's true for our podcast as well. If somebody were to call us up and say, I listened to 15 of your episodes and they're all trash, it's like, then you're dumb. Thanks for listening, stupid. You know what I'm saying?
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. So.
Nope. Anyway. So everybody has the choice to not listen to this podcast.
That's right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
The title of today's podcast will be Touring with Rat, mm-hmm. but the subtitle will be Feel Free to Turn This One Off. That's what I'll say. Feel free. I'll put that in the little. Feel free to. I already did the picture.
Right so, on.
And
you know, Jason, this was just an old school rambling podcast.
Old school rambling. We did get on a subject, but. Oh, while we got a few minutes while the Rorgsop plays out, what are we going to talk about next time?
I don't know. Now that we've been doing this a couple years, we're in on the third season of JBC.
Well,
I'd like to consult what we did last year. I don't know if that's a reliable tool, but
it's a tool. I can look
as
it
if the first year we did it, we our timing was perfect, and we. We did topics at the right time of year every time.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm assuming, but I don't know. What did we do last year?
Okay, last year? Let's see. Last year we did, around this time, meditative riffage would have been...
That's a music episode.
That would have been with this episode. So next week would be Jesus Sprite, one of our most listened to episodes.
That was next week last year?
Yeah, and it was a...
Jen Powell.
Yes. And Dan Jordash.
We had another guest. What was his name?
Dan Jordash. Is that my dad?
Yeah, Jan Jordash from...
that's right.
From a... Damn it. I'm sorry, Dan. I forgot the name of your podcast.
Oh, yeah. It was the Waking Up Sunday Morning or something like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I guess the song's over. I should stop the podcast. I could just play the... I could just play it again.
Yeah, all right, do it one more time.
Yeah, we're not done figuring out. God damn, this is the best podcast that ever happened.
It feels weird. I feel like I have to at least do the screamy thing, right? I don't think I've ever not done the screamy
thing. You gotta do the screamy thing. But yeah, last year we did a bareback next week. And then after that we did one called When Ryan Laughs, and it was 90 minutes long. But our first year, let me see what our
that
first
year. That
episode
stunk on ice.
Did it?
long periods of that were just hard to listen to.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Most of our podcasts aren't like that, by the way. I say that to our listener.
Well, that's... Yes, I'm glad you were... Because that's true. It's not always crappy. But let me see. Our first year... Did we start before March? Oh, here we go. Oh. So, last year... Or 2 years ago, we did Joshua Bray, We're Going to Kill You.
Music episode.
And then,
again, we base it on the topics that and the timeline of topics from the first year.
Yeah.
The second year is based on the first year's timeline.
Exactly. Well, here's what next week's would be. We called it Brie Olsen. Brie Olsen, as everyone knows, is a pornographic movie star. She has since left the industry, and she's struggling to find work. And I feel bad for her because, one, she did a great job as in the industry, and two, she deserves to find meaningful work. And that was the one with the bag of microphones ad from Bag of Mics.
Was there a topic to that show? Or?
Let's see, it says 10 episodes in a row, Mother Ninjas. In this episode, we talk about Komodo dragons running, Gibson guitars, microphones, Brie Olsen, episode 10, masturbation socks, Joe's dog, Carl's Jr., Disneyland. And we don't talk about when Jason is drunk, typing Disneyland is really hard to do because that's just like a universal truth. Okay, so next week, let's talk about porn. Done.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm on board.
Yeah, unless we change our mind. And
We might.
I don't know. We
are living in the bubble of our own podcast.
That's right.
We don't have 80 million people to satisfy or tell promises to that we have to keep.
That's true. I'm going to look up bubble porn now. I'm going to hit mute. I'm going to let you do the screamy thing. And
hey, for the first time, can you tell me what to scream?
Something about Rat. Like, what was their most famous song? Round and Round? Is that their most famous song?
Round and Round. Yeah, that's Rat.
Round and Round. Okay. All right. Good night, everybody. Or good day. Or whatever time of day it is. Good that one.
Good night, everybody. We got a rat! All right, good night, everybody. I'm going to go get a blowjob from Future Joe.